But we're getting in this Christmas season, and I love it. I mean, I know of pastors who kind of dread Christmas, and don't. I'm letting you know of a trade secret. But some pastors are like, oh man, we got to preach on Christmas. But you know, I always love taking a look at the story of Christmas, the story of Christ's coming, and really looking and praying through. And I'm going to preach about really a section of scripture I've never really preached about. And in the next few weeks, we're going to look at some different stories. We're going to look this week at Zechariah's story, and next week we're going to talk about Luke's story, and then the day of the children's, we're going to talk about your story, and it's going to be a fun time. But, you know, I imagine if we compared notes about our Christmas experiences as adults, probably they would be very different. But I imagine if we compared our experiences as children, they would probably be very similar. Just a lot in common. The agonizing wait for Christmas, the counting down of the days, all that anticipation. No matter what your situation was, there was always that anticipation. When we were kids, my mom, I don't know if you guys had one of these, but we had an Advent calendar. We see them now, and they have chocolate inside, which is a definite improvement from when I was a kid. We opened ours, it was just a picture, but now there's delights in there. But we used to open that, and it was really kind of the anticipation. You'd open up the door, and of course, we had four of us. You know, I have a brother and two sisters, so we fought over who got to open it, and it was just all in the Christmas spirit, of course. But the fact is, remember how long it seemed to wait when you were a kid, if you could just rewind that. Remember how long it seemed you had to wait for Christmas to come, you know, and the few nights before felt like the longest. And then you became an adult, and it all changed. And I get up and I tell you, yeah, there's 3.5 weeks till Christmas. And suddenly we panic. Right? When we were kids, it was like, oh, it's taking too long. And as adults, we're going, oh, man, it's, you know, going too fast. I've got too much to do. And it all kind of reverses. The great thing that was, as kids, no matter how long it seemed and no matter how agonizing it was, the wait and that anticipation, it always came, right? I mean, eventually it came. We felt like it was never going to come, but eventually it did. And there's that promise of that certainty of Christmas morning. Let's have a little confession time. How many of you actually, got the better of you, and you actually searched for presents that your parents got you? Anybody do that? Now, of you, how many of you actually? We have goody two shoes around here. People like you, know, right? How many of you actually found them? You actually found presents. Yeah, that could have been by accident too, right? When you're looking behind the closet in underneath, tucked, just accidentally. All right, so here's one. How many of you actually found the presents and then you played with them? Anybody actually find the presents and play with them? Yeah, no. Oh, didn't go. Okay, so no real rebels here. All right, so I know of people who have found presents, played with them, and broken them. And it's like Christmas morning, Mom, I don't, oh, thanks, but this one's broken. I don't know what happened, you know. Well, that dynamic of waiting, that dynamic of anticipating, and was the dynamic of the very first Christmas. More so, much, much more so than we feel. You know, that God promised way back, you know, the beginning, way back to Abraham, God promised that no matter what happened, there would always be a remnant. There would always be a group, a group of Jewish people that would be part of him. And today, we have people who are part of God's, sometimes we'll call them fulfilled Jews because they've accepted Christ. But there's always, from the beginning of, if we could say, the Jewish religion, the Jewish faith, there's always been a group, a remnant. And God promised that. And for many, many generations, they've waited every single year, looking way back in the Old Testament. They waited and waited, not for Santa Claus, but they waited for the Messiah. And this group of people lived literally every day of their life, living in obedience, doing what God told them to do, living generation after generation after generation, waiting for the Messiah. And for 99.999% of them, nothing happened. They waited and waited and looked for a coming Messiah. They died, and there was no fulfillment. They did not see that being fulfilled. They prayed, and they waited, and they remained faithful. And while many of the Jews took off and abandoned and their faith and thought, hey, it must have been, you know, a faith for some other time. It must have been a fairy tale or a myth. I mean, who would devote their lives to a story or a promise that's a couple of thousand years old? You know, there was always this group, though, that got up every day and thought, this could be the day. This could be the day the Messiah shows up. This could be it. And as we begin just a three-part Christmas series, I want to introduce you to a couple of those people who are faithful, who would be part of that remnant, and were faithful to God. And why? And you say, why is this significant? We're going to look at some people. Maybe you haven't even heard much about them. But why this is so significant for us today is this, is that at some point in your Christian experience, it may have already happened. If it hasn't, it will, and it'll certainly happen probably more than once. But you'll have those times in your life where God is so quiet, where it feels like God feels so inactive and so seemingly silent. There'll be times in your lives when we look around and we kind of think, why am I doing this? Why am I attending? Why am I serving? Why do I keep giving? Why do I keep believing? It just seems like nothing's happening. Why do I keep obeying? I mean, I feel like I'm missing out. Why do I keep missing out? And why am I not moving out and moving in and taking, why do I keep being so wholesome? You know, why do I keep obeying? It just doesn't seem, why in the world am I continuing day after day to live my life like there's something bigger than me and something to the Bible? Now, that may sound offensive to you, but way, way deep down in your heart, you've probably had one of those times when you say, maybe even if you accepted Christ as a kid, you're saying, am I following because my parents did? Because my parents taught me this? Or maybe out of fear, because I'm afraid if I abandon my faith or stop my walk with God, that somehow mystically something really bad is going to happen to me. And maybe it's more of a superstition than really, something that I really, really believe. And at some point in all of our lives, I think there's seasons, I think there's moments, there's times, there's periods in our lives where in our attempt to be faithful, we look around and you say, what am I getting out of this? I mean, what's accomplishing? I'm working so hard. Why isn't God blessing? Where is this going? And if you've ever had one of those periods in your life, those periods of doubt, or maybe you're in one right now, this Christmas story is for you. That anticipation, that unsuredness, well, we're going to look at two people in the Christmas story we're going to look at today. It is really your story and my story if you've ever experienced that. And I want you to look at Luke chapter 1, and I've got it printed there for you. You may want to follow along in the Bible if you want. We're going to look at quite a bit of this today. But in Luke chapter 1, we usually at Christmas time skip to Luke 2. But you're going to see I'm going to tie some pieces together from way back in the Old Testament, from Abraham all the way to what we know as the Christmas story. But in Luke chapter 1, look at verse 5. It was said, in the time of Herod, king of Judah. Now that's the Herod that killed all of the babies in Bethlehem. Bad guy. So in the time of Herod, king of Judah, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife, Elizabeth, was also a descendant of Aaron, which means, in our vernacular, Elizabeth and Zechariah were both preacher's kids. They were both in the priestly line of Israel. So that would be like, they were the PKs of their day. And their parents were too, and their grandparents, and their great-grandparents, and so forth. They came from a long line of what we would consider the religious, the holy people. Verse 5, but both of them were righteous in the sight of God, which meant in the context that the writer Luke believed that when God looked down on these two people, he looked down on them and said, those two, they are doing what's right. They are righteous. Look at how they live. God would point them out as an example. Kind of like, remember he did with Job, where he said, have you considered Job? Elizabeth, Zechariah were great people. And it says they observed all the Lord's commands. And if you read the Old Testament, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff to obey. We don't even like to read through all of that stuff. I mean, let's be honest, right? Some of that, you get into that heavy Leviticus stuff, and you're like, man, you're reading through the Bible? Wow, I'm going to be anxious to get through all of that. At least, you know, we get in the prophets, or maybe you got some wars in 1 and 2 Samuel and Kings, but you think, we don't even like to read through all that. They obeyed. They obeyed all of that. And it says, and they not only observe all the Lord's commandments and decrees blamelessly. Now, if you sent a private investigator, he's saying to, you know, Luke is saying, if you sent somebody even in their private lives, and even were watching them, there'd be nothing to tell. Their lives are consistent. And what's amazing that they were doing, what they were doing as priests and followers of God was based on promises that had been given a couple thousand years earlier. Everything that they were doing, the promise had been given, not 2,000 years from now, 2,000 years from when they lived. And they were followers of God based on those promises. And in the last 700 years, so they're from where they are, 700 years prior to Zechariah and Elizabeth, God had done seemingly nothing for the nation of Israel. And yet these two get up day after day and live their life as if Christmas is coming. They live their life as if the Messiah is really on his way and he's really coming. And again, there's no evidence that God's going to. There is no evidence. So I want us to peer into their lives and say, you know, so Zechariah and Elizabeth, we read about you guys being blameless. We see that you guys are righteous and you're such great people. Let me ask you this question. How's that working out for you? How's that going? All that blamelessness and righteousness and obeying and And when it comes to you hearing from God, nothing. Verse 7. But they were childless because Elizabeth was not able to conceive. So you know, you get this straight. Let me get this straight. Day after day, you do the right thing. You obey God. You serve God. You're in the temple. You're waiting for the Messiah. And this God who you've been so faithful to you leaves you without an heir on top of everything else. Now, I have to say this. In this culture, they always blamed the women. It was just the lack of, you know, of medical research. But it was always the woman's fault if they couldn't bear a child. And that's just because of lack of medical knowledge. And as important as it is in our culture for women to have a child, and some of you know that joy, you know that, even have friends or family, or even yourself perhaps, haven't been able to have children, you know the difficulty with that and how hard that is. In this culture, that was also just very, very, very difficult. And as important as it is in our culture to have a baby, in that, and I want to say that, no offense, and I don't think you'll take it because you'll understand, I'm just sharing with you culturally. It was considered about only, the only thing women were good for was for, you know, having babies. And I mean, women had no political standing whatsoever. They generally couldn't work. They meant most of the time they were uneducated. And not only that, but there was this religious stigma that God was the one who granted children to women. And God decided who was going to have a child and who wasn't. And if you didn't have one, it was looked at as a curse. It was looked at as God was not favoring you. That in that culture that God had forgotten you. So for a woman to not be able to get pregnant, there was this sense in which God had chosen to curse her. For some unknown reason. So Elizabeth, this righteous, blameless woman who before God, you know, she had to deal with this shame through her young years, through her middle years, through older years, and she realized it just wasn't going to happen for her. And yet she stays faithful. And then look at how this section ends. And they were both well advanced in years. It was over. It was, you know, it's too late. God had done nothing for them lately. And we find out later in the story that they had prayed. They had prayed and prayed and prayed. They had prayed that desperate prayer that couples who really want a child pray. And God had said no. And Elizabeth lived with that shame and that pain all the way into her old age. Here's what's ridiculous about this. Now follow this because I'm going to kind of give you a little bit of an Old Testament survey on this. Their entire faithfulness to God, as I said, was based upon a promise that God had made to Abraham 2,000 years earlier, 2,000 years from them. And here was the promise. Here's what God had supposedly said to Abraham in Genesis chapter 12. It says in verse 2, I will make you a great nation, which actually happened, okay? And I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And that happened. Most of you have heard of Abraham before you came in today, before you got here. And that was 4,000 years ago. But here's where it starts to break down. And you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. And for a while that happened. And whoever curses you, I will curse. And we're, I think, still trying to figure that one out. And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you. You being Abraham. That's the promise God gave to Abraham. Now, this was really the root of the idea why the Jews believed that there was something more for Israel. They were living their whole lives based on this promise. See, after God gave Abraham his promise, Abraham finally had a son. You remember that story? I've preached on that before. But in his old age, Sarah, old age, had a son, and who had a bunch of sons, who moved to Egypt and became a nation, the nation of Israel. And then they moved back to the promised land, and they became a kingdom, and things really took off. And it looked like that maybe during that age of the kingdom, when the kingdom was really being built, that God was going to bless all the peoples through the earth, through the lineage of Abraham. And I'm sure that's what they anticipated. They were really thinking that. And it looked like maybe that was how the promise was going to be fulfilled. Well, then there's David. And then there's Solomon, kind of the golden age of Israel. It was all good then. And they're thinking, okay, this is going to really take off, and God's really going to bless all the peoples. And then it was during the end of Solomon's reign that everything kind of fell apart after that. The nation split. And there were wars, there were good kings, there were bad kings. And between the time of those who followed Solomon and the time of Zechariah and Elizabeth lived, the nation had changed hands. I mean, possessing, you know, people coming in, taking over the land. The nation changed hands over 25 times. From the time of Solomon to the time of Zechariah and Elizabeth. You know, somebody come in, take over the place. 25 times. The Syrians took them over. The Babylonians took them over. The Greeks took them over. The Persians took them over. All these people. You can read all in the Old Testament. People coming in, taking them over. Now, after a while, they had absolutely no clout in the international affairs, and they didn't even have an army half the time. Now, again, this is the nation God says is going to bless. Is going to bless the whole wide world, and everybody's going to be blessed and cursed, right? So they were exiled at one point for 70 years. Over the years, they diminished as a factor in world events. And the idea that somehow the entire world was going to be blessed through the nation of Israel, I mean, a nation that no longer had any leverage whatsoever, to the people, it seemed like God's window of time was gone. They had no wealth. They had no authority, even on the, you know, concerning their own future. That somehow God was going to bless just seemed absolutely improbable and absolutely impossible. It couldn't happen. Then, for you history buffs, just to add a little insult to injury, back in 65 BC, Pompey the Great comes in. The great Roman general, he marches into Jerusalem. Now, this is very significant. He marches into Jerusalem. He occupies the city again. Pushed by the temple guards, he goes right into the temple, right past all into the holy place, right into the Holy of Holies, where the Jewish people had believed that's where God dwelt. And he walked right into the Holy of Holies, looked around, turned around, and walked out. See, nobody walked into the Holy of Holies unannounced. And uninvited, because they knew God would strike you dead if you hadn't gone through the proper ritual and the proper cleansing and that your heart was right. And everybody knew that. And as the priest gasped, as Pompey the Great walks in and walks out and nothing happens to him, the word spread throughout Jerusalem very, very, very quickly. The implication was clear. Jupiter, the God of the Romans, was more powerful than Yahweh. And Zechariah was a little boy when that happened. And no doubt his father, like Elizabeth's father, were priests during that era. And no doubt, I can imagine Zechariah at home and his dad comes home from serving in the temple. And his dad just ripping his robes off and probably weeping and weeping to see the temple desecrated like that. And God mocked that way. And everything that they had put their faith in looked like it just was crumbling. Walks right in, and God did nothing. And yet that little boy, with all of his background, seeing all of that trauma and drama, went into the priesthood. He served God his whole life. Married Elizabeth, who served God her whole life, who remembered the story, remembered the sacrifice, remembered the emotion of, why doesn't God act on our behalf? Now, I'm just going to be vulnerable with you. I've had those times saying, why doesn't God do this? Why doesn't God do that? Why does God seem so absent? And why doesn't God act on the behalf that they were praying for the nation of Israel? And what about that promise of Abraham? That was a real promise, wasn't it? And how in the world can this tiny conquered nation ever impact the world when we're just hanging on by a thread just to exist? Now, can you imagine all of that feeling? And because of this, many, many, many of the Jews turned away from temple worship. And you can probably imagine why. Many of them just turned away. They said, it's obviously, you know, it's not real. It's not something that's, you know, gonna be of any significance. Many, many, many did, but not everybody. Zechariah didn't, and Elizabeth didn't. And if you had come to them, which perhaps maybe even some did, we don't read it in Scripture, but if you had gone to them and said, hey, dear friends, it's over. I mean, it's a myth. It's not gonna happen. It can't happen. It certainly can't happen for you. Look, you're in older years. Sure, part of Abraham's promise came true, and maybe that's all God was really going to do in the first place. There was a nation, and yes, people know the name Abraham, and yes, some people were blessed, but Israel will never rise again. This is it. It's over. And nothing could ever come from this little dusty part of the Roman Empire. How could that possibly impact the world? You know, give it up, just walk away, enjoy the remaining years, enjoy your retirement years, the golden years of your life, because God, if there ever was, God has abandoned us. And if we had come to them and said that, we would have been dead wrong. The reason Luke begins his story with this story is because this was the beginning of something brand, brand new that would ultimately result in the fulfillment of God's promise to Abraham. And the reason why this story is so important to you and me is because there are moments, as I said, those periods, those times in our lives, and their questions are different, but it's like, God, why? Or when? Or just show me something. Just tell me something, right? You know, am I on the right track? I'll do anything, but just tell me. And so because of that, at times we ask ourselves these questions. Is God active? We wouldn't say, oh, well, that's it. I'm not going to believe in him anymore. I don't think he exists. But is he doing anything? We almost have a feeling like of deists, you know. There's a God out there somewhere, and I'm sure he's doing something for somebody. It just doesn't seem to be for me. Is God listening? Now, we can all say we've had those times. Well, we've prayed and prayed, and we said, you know, is God listening? Not did God hear us, because we know, okay, God hears us because he's around, but is he really listening? And sometimes, does God care? Does he care? And on Christmas, the answer is a resounding yes. Here's how the story goes on in Luke chapter 1. In verse 8, once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot, according to the custom of the priesthood, to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. Now, there were 23 different groups of priests, and they would cast lots, kind of like throwing dice. It's, you know, kind of like they did that for Jesus' garments. Remember, they kind of like throw dice to see who would get chosen to be able to light the incense and do this ritual. And so it was something they wanted to do. It was an honor. It was a privilege to do that. And Zechariah is chosen, and he goes into the temple and goes to the place where he stands right outside the curtain where the Holy of Holies is. You go into the temple, right outside the Holy of Holies, standing right there outside of the of Holy Holies, outside the curtains there. And everybody at this point, when they go through this, when they light this, everybody vacates the temple. It's just him and God. And he walks us in. Now, this was pretty rare. Some priests, if they experienced it, would only experience it maybe once in their life. But he's offering this incense on this very sacred occasion, and it was an honor to be chosen, and they believed that God was in the casting of lots. This wasn't just chance. They really felt like God directed them that way to choose which priest would have this. And that's certainly the case here. It says, and when the time for the burning, verse 10, and when the time for the burning of incense came, all assembled worshipers were praying outside. So he's in there all by himself. Then an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. Okay, so here he is. He's doing his faithfully priestly duty, doing everything, you know, that he's supposed to be doing. And suddenly an angel of the Lord appears. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, and this is the standard angel response. As we read, we see the angels, you know, say this, and we get it right away why they say this, and the reason they have to start all of the conversations with "Do not be afraid" is because when people saw an angel, they were afraid. Exactly. They were scared. This was and the only time people weren't afraid in the Bible of an angel, the only time, is when they didn't know it was an angel. There were angels that appeared, for example, to Abraham. He didn't know. He thought they were just regular people. And sometimes there was that realization. But people always, this was a standard, you know, angel answer, do not be afraid, because they already knew it was coming. When I hear modern stories about people who talk about seeing angels or having conversations with angels and so forth, I pretty much know that they aren't Bible angels. You know, because Bible angels, when a Bible angel appears, everybody falls on their face because they think they're seeing God. They're so big and bright and amazing. Bible angels are very powerful, obviously, and very big and scary, even when they aren't trying to be scary. That's why they would say, don't be afraid, you know, just me. Okay, you do that coming into your house. You don't want to startle anybody. Well, angels kind of do it. Don't be afraid. Here I am. And here, I hear people say, oh, I wish God would speak to me. Frankly, I don't know if I want God to speak to me. I mean, read the Bible. Whenever God spoke to me, it was terrifying. I mean, even when God dialed it down to one, you know, I mean, it was still, right, kind of terrifying. Because God is God. And we don't really get that. I don't get that. And this angel says he has good news, but still Zechariah is freaking out because, you know. And Zechariah, and I think about this too, and Zechariah was a good man. Can you imagine if an angel appeared to us? You know, he's a good guy. It's like, I think if an angel, man, I think if an angel appeared to me, I would just start confessing stuff. I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Just tell God I'm really, really sorry. I'm trying my best. I'm going to stop or whatever. You know what I mean? Right when we do that, we just, whatever we needed to do, we just start confessing stuff. But the angel, and of course the angel would say, wait, I got good news. And we'd be like, oh, good news. I'm not getting zapped. But here's what the angel says. He says, do not be afraid, Zechariah. Your prayer has been heard. Now, I have to say this. And I say this with all respect, I'd like to just hear that sometime. It doesn't even have to be that God's going to answer the way I want, but wouldn't it be kind of amazing? Now, I'd want a small angel, maybe an assistant to an angel, maybe an angel's cousin or something. I don't want an angel. That would freak me out. But just to know, wouldn't that be great? Sometimes, you know, you say, okay, I faithfully pray. Wouldn't you love to know, just, hey, just want to let you know God's heard you. I mean, that would be, there'd be a comfort in that. And you say, Pastor, don't you know that God hears your prayers? Yes, I know that. But you're like me. Wouldn't it be nice? Just God whisper and say, hey, I heard that. What you just asked me for, I got it. I heard that. Just to hear that would be enough. Here's what he says. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. And now this is going to be a famous John. He is going to be John the Baptist. That's right. That's how his story begins. John the Baptist begins. And verse 14, he will be a joy and a delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born. That's cool. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. Now, let's just talk about this. Why would he have to bring them back? Because remember, so many of Israel had abandoned the Lord. They had abandoned the Lord their God. And they had good reason to do so. God hadn't done anything for Israel for 700 years. It was a very dark period. Even in history, the last 400 years are a very, very dark period. They call it sometimes the silent period. And not silent from each other, silent from God, that nothing was said or spoken. And 700 years, it was a myth, it was over, it was great while it lasted, and there were some interesting things that happened, interesting stories to tell the children that they can pass along. But God of Israel had left and long abandoned Israel, and that's why they ditched. And he said, John is going to bring people back. Verse 17, and he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and the power of Elijah, and there's a whole message in that, but to turn the hearts of the parents to their children, and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. And Zechariah asked the angel, how can I be sure of this? Now, Zechariah is very diplomatic, and guys, I think we can learn something from him here. He says, I am an old man, and my wife is well along in years. Classy guy. She's had some birthdays past her 29th. He's being very diplomatic. My wife she's well along. I'm old, but she's well along. And he's saying, I want to be careful how I say this. I hear some of this stuff gets written down, And so, at an age, I appreciate the good news, but I think you're a little late, Angel. I just want, you can imagine having this conversation. We've been praying since we were married, and we prayed through our 20s, and we prayed through our 30s, and just for the fun of it, we prayed through our 40s, and we almost, quit in our 50s, but now look, I'm old. It's over. You're late. And the angel said to him, he's saying, how do you, you're asking me, how do I know this is going to happen? He pulls out his resume and says, I'm Gabriel. Hello? I'm Gabriel. Remember, I'm an angel. Remember, you just got freaked out a minute ago. How do you know this is going to happen? He says, I'm an angel. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and tell you this good news. And now you will be silent and not able to speak until the day this happens, because you did not believe my words, which will come true. And here's my favorite part of the whole story. Here's my favorite part, which will all come true at their appointed time. Appointed time. Thinking from Zechariah's point, you think, wait. You mean God had this day marked on his calendar? Yep. You mean all these 700 years that have been silent, all since the glory days of David and Solomon and all of that, God has waited all this time to keep his promise? Yep. You mean God watched his own children abandon him, leave, because they felt like this was all that you had forsaken them. They left, and it looked like the nation of Israel could do nothing. It looked like it was over. It's like they couldn't bless even their own selves, let alone all the rest of the world. And they curse. We weren't even worried about cursing. You mean you watched all this and this was the appointed time? Yep. You mean there was an appointed time and God didn't stop ever paying attention to us? No. Even though God has been so quiet, he hasn't been inactive, he hasn't lost interest? No. Verse 21, meanwhile, the people were waiting for Zechariah. Remember, he's in the temple, and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. This wasn't a long ordeal. You would go in, you'd light some incense, and you'd leave. So this wasn't a long thing. So they were getting a little bit nervous about this. I mean, they're outside thinking, is he dead? Did God strike him down? What happened? What's going on here? And then it says, verse 22, when he came out, he could not speak to them. They realized he had seen a vision in the temple. Oh yeah, he'd seen a vision, all right. It wasn't a vision, it was a real deal. And he wasn't able to tell until later. So he's making motions, and he kept making signs to them and remained, I don't know what kind of signs he'd make, I don't know. Trying to explain what had happened. But his time of service was completed. Then it says he returned home. After this, his wife Elizabeth became pregnant and for 5 months remained in seclusion. The Lord has done this for me, she said. In these days, he has shown his favor and taken away my disgrace among the people. But see, that was just the warm-up act. That was just the introduction. That was just the setup. That was the preface to the whole big story. This was just evidence that God was gearing up to do what God had planned to do all along. Planning to do for those who had remained faithful generation after generation. They had died. They had never seen the fulfillment. They never saw the promise fulfilled. They passed it on to the children. They said, well, okay, it's not going to happen in our lifetime. Continue hoping that Messiah comes. And generation after generation did that. Feeling like God is silent, God is inactive, that God is, but we know, and they trusted that God was a God who keeps his promise. And every generation in Jewish life, there was that remnant. There was those faithful people. There was those who believed, who grew up believing that God was going to come through, that God did still care, that God still was the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and he was their God too. And here's how the story concludes, and our next story begins. In the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, remember she's in seclusion for five, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. When we take what happened with them and we look at our own lives, it kind of puts us in our own dilemma. And I just wanted, I'm just giving you some general things and you're going to apply the relationships to them. But there may be that dilemma of, do I stay or do I go? Do I stay or do I go? Do I stay in this marriage and work it out or do I go? I'm sick of just being so faithful. I'm tired of putting up with this. I'm tired of this. Do I stay or do I go? It seems like God isn't answering any of my prayers. I read his word. I seek him and nothing's happening. So do I believe or do I just stop believing? I'm just tired, and I've been serving, and it seems like there's no blessing, and do I keep going? And the question is, do we serve or just go do something else? I could share with you the statistics of pastors who just get out of the ministry just because of burnout or doubt or difficulties or whatever. Not just moral stuff, by the way, but just, and it's heartbreaking. Do we give or do we just consume? Do we stay in that marriage? Do we do what everybody else is doing? Do we do that shady deal at work? I mean, do we really believe this or do we continue maintaining our integrity? All the time asking ourselves, why am I being so honest? Everybody in the industry operates this way. Why nobody's even noticing. No one's even promoting me. In fact, no one even cares. They just laugh because I'm Christian and I've got standards and there's things I'm not going to do and everybody else is doing them and getting their rewards for them and I'm not even getting any blessing from it, And maybe you're a student. You say, hey, everybody cheats a little bit and fudges a little bit on stuff. And, you know, and everybody does it. And, you know, here I am and I'm working so hard and I'm not even getting the grades I feel like I should be getting. And everybody else is cheating and they're doing better. I just don't feel any of God's blessing at all. So why even try? And why am I always wondering what God thinks all the time? Why does that just always hound me? And why do I always feel so guilt-ridden? And why do I always seem to be the most conservative one in a conversation? And, you know, and why am I always wondering what God thinks? It's just, why am I doing this and getting nowhere? And maybe your feelings in your heart aren't as dramatic as that, but there are areas of your life where you're thinking, why am I trying this hard? Man, what? I guess, you know, my dating life, I guess I just need to lower my standards a bit. Why are my standards so high? I mean, there's some really good people out there who aren't Christians. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, you date Christians and man, they're worse than the ones who aren't. And what do you do? Maybe I should just, you know, but let me tell you, using the analogy of Israel, there is that remnant of Christians that decide whether or not they're going to remain faithful in spite of the fact that they don't see God. Maybe it feels like God's not doing anything, but you decide to remain faithful. If you've ever felt like that, like you're praying and reading and trusting and serving and all this, and you feel like, where is God on all this? I have some great news for you. There's nothing wrong with you. I mean, we're all sinners, okay? But there's nothing wrong with you. Any more than there was something wrong with Zachariah and Elizabeth. We need to understand that if we're going to follow Jesus, if we're going to follow God's will, this is the common experience of those who place their trust in Christ. It's our tendency as human beings. Abraham's family thought that they would see the promise fulfilled. The disciples, when Jesus left, Jesus said, I'm going back, but I'm coming back. They thought they would live to see that. See? And we think, where is God? Where is God? And welcome to a world, welcome to a situation just like Zachary and Elizabeth, a couple who decided, hey, we're going to walk blamelessly before our God in spite of what we see, in spite of what people say. And you know, we can't imagine how God's going to give us a child. We can't imagine how God would use the nation of Israel to bless the whole rest of the world. You know, when we're really nothing more than just another Roman territory, some, you know, area that Rome has taken over. That's the dilemma that all of us will face as we're facing our walk with God. It's a challenge. But the challenge is this. Will you be willing to be a part of that remnant? As we just talked in our series on Christian, there's a lot of people who call themselves a Christian. But to really follow God means you're going to sometimes have those times when you feel like, I'm blameless before God, I'm living a righteous life, and yet where is God? How come he's not holding up his side of the bargain? And God wants us to understand. There are some important things for us to remember. Here's some Christmas reminders. The fact of Jesus coming is a reminder of several things, and the biggest one is the last one. But I want you to know, first of all, your faith has not been misplaced. Your faith has not been misplaced. In those times when you say, well, maybe this isn't exactly the way. Maybe there's another religion that is right. Be assured, your faith is not misplaced. And even in those times when God is silent, he is not necessarily still. We may not see him working. He may seem quiet to us, but God is not necessarily still. And even in those times when God is still, it does not mean he's disinterested. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you. Now, there's those times, and I've had them, when I felt like, and I've been convinced, you know, I know God's a God of love and all that, but he's probably got other things, you know, he's busier things, and that's not a reflection of my theology. But we feel like, even sometimes we feel like he's disinterested. And even when we're convinced he's disinterested, let me tell you, it has nothing to do with God's plan for your life. It has nothing to do with God's plan for his world. See, the truth is that God can do anything that he chooses to do. And that's we've got to get assurance of that. And that's exactly what Zechariah and Elizabeth discovered. And you know what? Elizabeth and Zechariah, I know this, and you would know it too by reading the scripture. If they had never seen that promise fulfilled, they would have passed along to their family. They didn't have any children, but they would have passed along to their family saying, keep faithful to God. Stay faithful. He's coming. The Messiah is coming. Realize also God pays attention and is moved and he is blessed by those who remain faithful. I didn't say those who remain perfect. I'm just saying those who remain faithful. But best of all, this is the thing I want you, if you don't get any of these, I want you to remember that Christmas, the reminder, it's a reminder of this, that your faith and your hope is not in vain. A popular song, at this time of year, was a song actually written by a French poet back in 1847. It's been around a long, long time. It's one of the most popular Christmas hymns called O Holy Night. And I love this line, and it captures the very idea of this message. Long lay the world for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Long lay the world in sin and error pining. And pining, that's a word we don't use much, but it means a craving. Sin and error, they were craving and longing and yearning for what? For God to bring his Messiah. And Christmas is a reminder that our longing and our waiting and our agonizing is not in vain. Your faith is not misplaced. No matter how far God feels from you, he's here. He's not inactive. He is caring, and he's coming. Let's pray.